Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game in this first half. Also, take an in-depth look at session piano player extraordinaire Nicky Hopkins. I think you're going to like this little walk down memory lane. Interesting hearing everyone's story. So that's coming in a second. First, I'll tell you about Bet Online. The wait finally over. Football back, Jack. Good. Love me some football. Still, you want to get on some of that action? Good. Bet Online. Got games coming up. We got this Sunday, we got the Falcons at the Cowboys, and we got the Bills and the Dolphins and the Rams and the Eagles. Patriots Seahawks will be a pretty good game. More options to wager than any place online, from spreads to totals to props, and you can get in on season opening bonuses and wager to win division and championship futures as well. Head to Bet Online today. Take advantage of the great sign up bonuses they have for you over there. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner at Podcast One. Don't forget, use the promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
We're back inside the toolbox and the drought is over. Though the air in California is foggier than Andy Reid's visor hat, the NFL is back across the country. So we're going to dig back to before they bastardized and homogenized this classic country composition, much like they did to Joan Jett, except her song wasn't nearly as endearing. Let's cook a pig in the ground and throw the skin around. Here's the juniors in the NFL, from Seau to Odell Beckham, from the most famous junior in country music. We got Bo Cephas on the Toolbox.
I got ketchup on my blue jeans that just burned my hand. Lord, it's hard to be a bachelor man. Are coming over tonight. Do you want to drink? Hey, do you want to party?
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. With Gina Grad on news, Walt Bryan on sound effects, Jeff Cesario on sports, and we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game. And now, in honor of his birthday, Adam is going to give Brian a free point-shitting pass. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but got a man to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And happy birthday, Bo Bryan.
Hey, I like football.
But that song, didn't they change the words because of COVID? Instead of coming over tonight, it's like, all my rowdy friends know that it's Monday night. Like, it's something like that now.
Totally makes sense, because that's what we have to do. Speaking of that, so first NFL football Sunday behind us, I was watching with the boys, some of the boys over at the other shop, and we're watching, and, you know, some of the stadiums had, you know, a quarter. I guess they're going for a quarter full. You know, they're yep. 20,000 people out of 80,000 people. But it's also, and then when they show the crowd, you know, air quotes, the crowd, everyone's just spread out all over the place. It looked like one of those mid-season baseball games when your team was 13 games under 500 and they'd go to the bleachers and on a Thursday night, and it's like nobody there. Fine. Like, I get it. Makes sense. I don't get why LA can't do that. Like, this, I guess what I'm saying is like, why is everything a goddamn statement with LA? You know what I mean? Like, every other stadium has figured it out. Just, The capacity is 85,000 people. Good. Let 17,000 in. Let them say they were there for the kickoff of your stadium, and they'll spread out. But how does this work everywhere? Like, that's my whole thing about L.A. Why is there always, like, we do things differently and worse than everywhere else? And you know, I think we have this thing where it's like we have to lead by example. But I don't know. Let Louisiana, let them lead by example for 10 minutes, or let's whatever they're doing in college, whatever they've done in the pros, the ones where there's 15,000 people in the 80,000 seat stadium, just do that.
You know, the the some sort of motto. You're so far behind, you think you're first.
Yes.
Is that us? Mm. Is that who we are now?
Well, I was yelling about it to Gergos the other day, which is like whenever you do something that has to do with building, like where you go like, I want a ventless fireplace in my room, or I want tempered glass but not laminated glass. And they go, no problem, we'll send it out. And then they pause and they go, you're not in California, are you? And I go, I am. And they go, ugh. They don't take the temper. They only take the laminate stuff. Right. And they go, it's good in 49 other states. It's just not good. And I'm like, why is it, what's so inherently right. dangerous in Los Angeles or California that we can't have tempered glass versus laminated glass? Like, they just don't take it over there. And it's like, I just, you know, safety's fine. Let's just stop it at a certain point because at
and
a certain, yes.
Shouldn't California be the tip of the spear for innovation? It's Silicon Valley. It's Hollywood. It's all the stuff that like should be leading the world and all this stuff. And here we are with these ridiculous regulations.
Well, it's kind of it all goes back to, for me, the notion of Carroll Shelby coming to Venice Beach in the early 60s so he could be left alone to build his dream supercar. Along with the Doors, sort of down the street, yeah. You know, at the same time, nobody would ever come from Texas to Venice Beach to build their own automobile now. And yes, it is, there's a dynamic to it that's interesting, which is we definitely used to be let your freak flag fly. Come on out. This is the place for the bold innovators, the place, the people that want change that are willing to risk it. And somewhere along the way, we got wrapped in bubble wrap. All right. So football back up and running, and, you know, kind of interesting. Fine. Kind of missed the fans, but the games were still fun to watch.
Did you watch the Chiefs-Texans game?
Yeah. Watched the Chiefs-Texas game.
So I'm wearing my Kansas shirt today, even though they're Missouri. But a lot of controversy with a lot of Facebookers. And I would love to get your thoughts on this, both of you. So I didn't watch it. I only saw it afterwards. People tweeting, I am so ashamed of my home state and my home city and the booing. I am so ashamed that people were booing when they, you know, all got together and linked arms for unity. And then now people are posting on Facebook, people that I knew from high school and stuff. They were saying, I was at the game. There was no booing. Did they
sweep they piped it in?
So, this is like, it feels very controversial now. And some people are saying they were booing because there were still Texans coming out of the tunnel. And there's just it wasn't about the unity. So there's just much controversy surrounding the booing.
Yeah, there are cell phone videos of people in the audience and the booing is not nearly as prominent as it was on TV.
I think everyone was out of the tunnel, but the thought was, are they booing the Texans for staying in? And not the unity part.
Oh. What do you mean? Like,
it's Rick Nelson's garden party.
Yes.
Remember that story?
Yeah, Rick Nelson.
Say, do it. Tell it for Adam, because I know it.
Ricky Nelson. Sorry, had to play Madison Square Garden. He was considered like a bumpkin back then with all Yoko Ono and Leno and all the cool kids.
He's pretty square.
Yeah, gotcha. He was square 50s in the middle of like 60s Vietnam stuff.
Sure.
And it was one of those crossover things where they're gonna have, I think, John Lennon and Yoko, and I can't remember some of the other cool bands, but then they had 1950s Brill Cream Ricky Nelson come out there, and they're like, hey, Ozzy and Harriet, we're not down with this. And he'd rather, I think, drive a truck if you gave him a choice to do this again.
Yeah, there was booing in the balconies, and Rick Nelson was devastated. He's like, oh my God, they're literally booing me off the stage. Turns out there was a fight, or there was some sort of altercation, and they were clearing it out, blah, blah. And he when he found out, he was so relieved, he wrote this song, and Chris can look it up. I think it became like a number one hit or something like that.
It did. I mean, it was a huge hit, but I don't think he ever addressed the relief that it was a fight. He just went like, screw you guys. That was the
oh,
theme.
Oh, really?
Oh, the theme of the song is like, if that's what it's going to take, I'd rather drive a truck. Like at the end, he's like, I don't want any part of these like New York homos anymore. Like, I'm done.
Yeah, it was a top 10 hit.
Top 10. But
I never knew what that song was about.
The garden party was...
I never looked into it. Wow.
Yeah, that was the garden, which was the garden party. All right, so... Yeah, he was just kind of... What was the other band? It was Yoko and... Oh, Chuck Berry sung Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah, Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley. And then the Squaresville 50s guy, Ricky Nelson, came out, and they were like, ugh. I guess.
His sons avenged him. So
that's
it's okay.
Right, Nelson.
That's right,
Ricky Nelson. So, so the games were there's some good games and it was fine. I some of the sound effects, some of the cheering and the booing seemed a little confusing to me. Like I kept saying, like, is this a home team or is this the away team? Like, why are they cheering when the away team scored or what it was? I know, Brian, you had some thoughts on that as well.
They're still working it out. You know, these guys aren't used to pressing buttons at every play. Obviously, the crowd does what it does. I was forced to watch the game on Fox, the Packers at the Vikings, because I was at the in-laws house and they didn't have the package and everything. So I'm sitting here watching the national game that I don't give two shits about. But when Dalvin Cook scored, I think Chris has the clip and the audio is important because Dalvin Cook scoring the go-ahead touchdown here in the first quarter, the first score of the season for the hometown Vikings. And it goes from a low murmur to a low murmur. There is no change.
We'll play it.
Now third and goal. Cook is into the end zone. Touchdown, Vikings. Following his fullback, C.J. Ham.
Low murmur.
There's some carnage at the line.
Yeah.
And again, I just go back and reference that game a year ago.
But not a lot of and at home.
Turn it off.
And at home. You know, what I realize as I was talking to all these kind of old school guys that were watching the games with me, when I was young and we were dealing with sports, there was hatred. There was hatred if you were a Lakers fan against the Celtics. There was hatred if you're a Dodgers fan. You know, Reggie Jackson. We didn't like Reggie Jackson at all. There was hatred. I hated the Pittsburgh Steelers my entire adolescent life. I hated them with a red-hot passion. And that's how it worked. Like there was the notion of Jack Tatum and Jack Lambert hooking arms before a football game would have been unthinkable.
Like, it's almost a betrayal.
A betrayal. Like part of it was the team, the rivalry, and everything. But the other part was these guys hate each other. Like Jack Lambert hates everyone on the Oakland Raiders, and everyone on the Oakland Raiders hates Jack Lambert and hates LC Greenwood, and they hate all these guys. And I don't know if they actually hated each other, but they sure convinced me when I was 13 that they hated each other. And they kind of acted as if, like, there wasn't a lot of patting on the butt or helping up or, you know, that thing that's kind of new, like when the defensive tackle rushes the quarterback, hits the quarterback, knocks him down, and then kind of helps him up or does the weird hands thing or something. No, there was none of that. Jack,
No.
They hated Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers hated each other.
You know what's to blame for this? I mentioned it before, I think, in the context of basketball, but certainly in terms of football, all these guys are growing up playing in the same All-Star games, playing at like high school, like the Nike All-Star games, playing in the same senior bowls and going to the same combine things. Like these guys are friends from childhood, like especially basketball. There can't be more than 12 NBA players, non-Europeans, 12 NBA American players who weren't like Nike All-Stars. Like these guys were like friends from way back.
Yeah. So for me, the hooking of the arms with the Texans and KC, I just don't like the camaraderie of it before the game. I was always kind of okay with the handshake after the game.
Yeah.
And I look at like a prize fight. Muhammad Ali would shake the guy's hand, you know, after the fight. It's the pre-fight. Everyone's joking around and having a good time. That sends a very dangerous example to my son. All right. So I had this thing, and maybe it's the reason somebody invented Wikipedia, but I was driving my car, and I had an old CD. I got out my Aston Martin, hadn't driven it in a million years, had an old CD in it, and the old CD was a Graham Parker CD from March of 1982, I realized I was getting ready to graduate high school. I'd probably hit about a low water mark in my life. I was done playing football. I was clearly not going off to college. The economy was a shambles. I was going to graduate high school and just move on to like living in a garage and seeing if I could find a job cleaning carpets or digging ditches or something like that. And it was a Graham Parker album that I had that was in my car that I hadn't heard in many, many, many years. obviously back to 1982 is when it came out. And it was his first solo album, so he didn't have his backup band, The Rumor, or his band, The Rumor. He had a bunch of session guys. So I was listening to it now through my 56-year-old adult ears, because everyone should go back and listen to stuff or watch stuff that they watched in high school and beyond, because now...
Start with the Goonies.
Start with the Goonies.
Oh, come on, Brian.
Make your way to Love Boat, and then you go to Graham Parker. So I know it's an old... Yeah.
It's a winding road.
It's an old trope, but it's a trope for a reason. So... You know, because when you're listening to it when you're 17 and you're in high school, and by the way, I was the only 17-year-old in North Hollywood High was listening to Graham Parker, but it was like I was hearing it on one level, and then when I'm 56, I'm driving around, I'm listening to it on another level. And so this, and also, by the way, the equipment is better now. Like, I got 18 speakers in my car. And a couple of amps. Like, the stuff is just better than it was. What I was listening to at home was a phonograph that had an 8-track, and it had a cassette player and a radio tuner, and I think a shower in it as well. Like, when I mean, it was just the stuff I was listening to was like my dad's Radio Shack, you know, piece of junk. But I was listening to it with the clarity. By the way, in a modern car where you can roll the windows up and get some quiet, the old car is like wind whistling through the crack in the door and the windows and the weather stripping and everything. And I was listening to the album is Another Gray Area, and it's his first solo album. And I was listening to first song I was listening to was called Dark Side of the Bright Lights, I think. And I was hearing the guy playing the piano. We'll play a little of it. And I was listening to the guy who was playing the piano. And I was like, oh, this guy playing the piano is really good.
The party may wind down. The bottles are strewn and broken. The games are all played out like you.
Listen to the piano.
The night's conversation might never really end up anywhere.
So I was listening to this at night just driving home, and I was like, the guy who's playing this piano is really good. And I didn't know anything about it when I was young, obviously. But I was like listening to it as a 56-year-old now, and I was like, whoever the guy they hired, and I knew it wasn't a guy in his band, it was a session guy, was a really good piano player. And so then I went and I looked him up. I was like, who was playing the piano in the background? And you can play the next song, by the way, which the next song is kind of upbeat, which is the next song in the album, which is called Can't Waste a Minute. But you can hear him playing the piano on this one, too.
Can't waste a minute.
So you can bring it down. So I was like, someone's doing a really good job in the background on the piano. It's not overbearing, but I can hear this person knows what they're doing. So then I went and looked the guy's name up, and his name is Nicky Hopkins. And I said, oh, it's interesting. That's the part I like about life is I get older. You get to look, you get to find out like who these guys were, where they were, when they were, what they were doing. Also, you know, when a nip, well, you can read his bio. It's pretty long. So I told Dawson just to kind of selectively edit it.
The first important thing is he first started playing the piano at the age of 3. Now he played with a shitload of awesome bands with the Rolling Stones. He did pretty much every album between the Buttons in 67 through Tattoo You in 81, except for Some Girls. He played on Sympathy for the Devil, No Expectations, Monkey Man, Lovin' Cup, Angie, the song that Angie Fitzsimmons had no idea existed.
That's right.
Waiting on a Friend, too. Great piano part in that song. Then he plays with the Kinks. From the album The Kink Controversy, the album Face to Face, Something Else by the Kinks, which is the name of the album, Something Else by the Kinks. Then he played with The Who.
God, I love The Who.
He played on My Generation and The Who by Numbers.
He played with the Beatles, Brian.
I was going to say, please believe me when I say I heard the name and I'm like, Nicky Hopkins, why do I know that name? One of the rare guest stars on a Beatles album, and you can count the guest performers on one hand. Usually they had George Martin play the guitar. They're like old ass producer. Like he played piano on Revolution. Not just any old song, like one of the best Beatles songs.
Right. He hit the electric piano on Revolution. Played a little bit with Harry Nilsson. Played it's important.
Badfinger.
He played with the Jeff Beck group after the Yardbirds disbanded, and that included Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood. Did some stuff with Jefferson Airplane.
Wow. There he is with John Lennon. Fucking
Steve A, Miller man. Band, your favorite.
Yeah, let's not hold that against him. So I was like, oh my God, this guy, he was known as one of the most prolific session piano players in the world, and he played with all these massive groups. And then he died in 1994 when he was 50. And it was also, I don't know why, you guys have heard me talk about this before, but I think he died in September of 94. For me, that would have been right when I was getting started in show business. I don't know. It's always sort of bittersweet or strange when you hear about a guy who was so prolific and he's dying the second you start to live, essentially, or you start to have a life in show business. And then I thought, you know, I don't know. Then you just lay down all the work you can and people hear it. And it's sad. They don't know it's you. You know what I mean? And one of his causes was trying to get session guys paid because all the other guys were licensed and all the other guys got royalties and stuff. But he was always a gun for hire.
Yep.
And he would take these songs, and there's no way Graham Parker and or whoever was doing all the arranging. He was playing. Like, he was doing what he does. He was making those songs better.
He was tickling the ivory.
He was tickling the ivory back there. But it's not like the guys he was playing with could play the piano or even certainly couldn't play as well as he could. He was playing along, making everything better. And then at the end of the day, he got $100. Mm-hmm. And everyone else owned everything. You know, they owned all the publishing and all the rights and all the everything. And he just was a day player.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, you think about like the Wrecking Crew and stuff like that and these incredible session musicians. Do they love music more than famous rock stars, or are they angrier than famous rock stars? Like, what is that?
I don't know. But there should be. Part of his thing was see if we can get these guys paid, and probably including him.
He played this on piano. He plays the piano on this.
The guitar does it.
Yeah, hold on.
I know.
It'll get there.
You are so beautiful.
The great Joe Cocker.
Really?
Let's see if I can find the
Jesse. You're everything I hope for.
Little synth action.
You're everything I need.
Sounds like the guy you want in the room.
Yeah. Well, he was in the room for so much of this stuff, and you know, people don't really know his name. And somewhere in 1981 and a half or 82, he's playing with Graham Parker. And somewhere in 2020, I'm just driving my car going, who is this guy? This guy's good. I know this guy's good. And
yeah, he was on his way to really making it as a real famous musician. He was picked up by Cyril Davies All-Stars, which had like Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, and like this super group. And then when he was 19, because he had Crohn's disease, he had to go to the hospital, and they did a series of operations that almost killed him. So he's in the hospital for 19 months, and while he was in the hospital, Cyril Davies dies of leukemia.
No.
And so when he gets out, he just can't, he's too weak because of his health, he can't tour, so he just had to be a session musician.
Well, as I always say to everyone, are you lucky or aren't you lucky? You know, he plays the piano at age 3. He's a prodigy. But then he gets Crohn's disease. But then he becomes one of the more celebrated session guys in the world because he's in there with the Beatles, and he's in there with The Who, and he's in there with Graham Parker.
And he did a lot of the Stones' best work, like Give Me Shelter, Sympathy for the Devil.
In there with the Stones, but on the other hand, nobody knows his name, and then he was dead by the time he was 50. So I don't know. I don't know what the moral of the story is. I just know there's so many of those crazy, interesting stories out there, right?
Imagine he was also a Scientologist.
How many of these are there?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Imagine not getting royalties for playing on Imagine.
That's right. Is that a lyric?
Hold on. Imagine
that's a deleted lyric.
Yeah. And then I don't know, but then would you not do it? Because we'll forever hear his playing on everything. And then it's also, you know, I always have this thing where it's like, I don't know how to play the piano, I don't know how to play an instrument, I can't sing, I'm not musically inclined. But if you're really good at what you do, then the layperson can kind of hear it, right? Like, yeah. I can hear how good this guy is at playing the piano, and I've never played an instrument. Part of his thing was he was in the background making everyone better in front of him, and I could hear him way off in the background playing his piano. Well, you want to play Crying for Attention? It'll be like his it'll be a nice a belated eulogy for the great Nicky Hopkins, who died 26 years ago. Now we're coming up on 26. Well, right about 26 years ago, right? I mean, what's this? What, right now?
September, right?
Yeah. Right, September 6th.
Right. 26 years ago. Sorry. You can just hear him in the background. Dawson. I just thought it was, I don't know, it's fun to pick out little pieces of life that have always been around and always floating around and unravel the mystery a little bit. And I was glad to, I was sort of happy with myself that this guy was so insanely prolific and I'd never really knew who he was.
I smell a new chassis documentary.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you the Chassis documentary that I stumbled across when we were sitting around watching football today, which was we're starting to talk about like Flo from is she Geico?
Progressive.
Stephanie Courtney.
Yeah. And so we're talking about all these people. There's the emu guy with the he's got the ostrich with him, and he's the, you know, okay. There's all these guys. So now, wouldn't it be a great doc, all of these actors and actresses that became this person, the spokesperson?
The Verizon guy.
Yeah, it's all the they're all there. And then, like, this sort of double-edged sword of making a ton of money finally, but also just being typecasted as this person for the better part of your career. And
you're super famous. You're super successful by any Hollywood standard. And yet you're only that person.
Yeah. And you're more famous. Flo is more famous than Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, to the average person, absolutely
recognizable.
In any airport, in any mall in the United States, you are much more famous than Daniel Day-Lewis.
And that's a great example because he's always in makeup or mustaches or beards.
You might be more recognizable than Robert De Niro. You're on the TV every day, all day, everywhere, and there is no genre for you. You're everywhere. You're on sports. You're on the housewife shows. Like you're on every genre. It's not like, well, I don't watch MTV, so I don't know this, or I don't do sports, or I don't, you know, sometimes if you're that guy, that late night guy, then people who go to bed at 10 don't know who you are. You know what I mean? If you're just ubiquitous. But on the other hand, at some point you're a serious comedic actor or actress and what have you, and who knows what you could have been. Who knows if you could have been one of the cast of Friends, you know?
Close a groundling.
Right.
You know who the ultimate example of this is? Ernest.
Mm-hmm.
That dude was a Shakespearean actor, and he became Ernest, and he passed away, God, how many years ago?
Hey, but Vern.
He was a real actor.
Yeah, Jim Varney.
Jim Varney, yep.
Jim Varney was Ernest. Jim Varney was doing like local automotive spots out here before with the Hey Vern stuff before. And so then it's this thing where, and then, you know, of course you get into Jared from Subway, but I mean, there's a lot of different directions you could go here, but you get all those people and you do a doc. Mm-hmm. You can go back to the 50s. You can go to the grandma who's like, where's the beef? You know what
Raisins
I mean? Like,
under the pickle.
You're right. Absolutely. Right. It's time
to make the donuts.
It'd be an interesting subject for docs. You get 15 or 20 of these people. I don't know. Their experiences could be this is the greatest ever, or it could be this is stifling. You know?
Yep. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, like Gina said.
I do not know. All right. So anyway, that's what we came up with when I was drinking beers and watching football. Let me tell you about Stamps.com. As we adjust to the new normal, we still need to be smart about how we do business. Luckily, Stamps.com makes things easier. I've used Stamps.com here for 10 years plus. We send out merch. We send out books. We send out paperwork. Whatever we send out, we send it out with Stamps.com. Whether you're a small business sending invoices or online seller, shipping products or, or just working from home, you need to mail stuff. Stamps.com, they help you. That's where they come in. Lets you buy and print U.S. Official U.S. postage, any size letter or package, 24/7 at home, 5 cents off every first class stamp, and up to 62% off USPS and UPS shipping rates. Special offer, 4-week trial, plus you get free postage and a digital scale, no long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone, top of the homepage, and that is stamps.com. Enter Adam, save all that money. Yes, Gina Grad.
I have the tagline for the poster for your doc. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Life's a pitch, man.
I like that. Yeah. Life's a pitch.
You can have it.
Yeah. It's not bad.
Thank you.
We're not going to use it, but it's not bad.
It'll be noted. It'll be the subtitle. Yeah, the subhead.
That's what I want.
Yeah, I just thought, it's interesting because at the heart of all these people is a is a, it's like any great, oh God, I'm going to think of this, but any great clown is first a great acrobat. And any, you know, the sure. Washington Generals who get beat by the Harlem Globetrotters, those guys were the best players in their high school team, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And all the, God, I'm looking at Dawson, the piano player who is the comedian, million years old.
Like, Ernest Borgnine?
No, but it sounds close, like Ernest yeah. Borgnine. Yes, it's Leo Borgnine or something, Leo Borgnine or whatever. That guy. First, you're a concert-level piano player, and then you're a comedian.
Victor Borga.
Right. Right. But he's a concert-caliber pianist, and now mm-hmm. and then he does it for a goof after that. So all these actors you're seeing, these guys are the funniest people in their groundling class. Like, these guys are, you know, they have chops, they're good, they're strong, comedic whatevers that could have easily ended up on any sitcom or anything, but they ended SNL. Up here in yeah. SNL, and now they're here, and that's where they are. Yeah, Victor Borga. There you go. All right, why don't we take ourselves a break, and then we'll come back. We'll do the Rotten Tomatoes game right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for another ballsy month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes 2 Vinnie Tortorich approved and invented ultra fat instant energy packs so you don't reach for that donut. 4 shot glass ice molds so you can keep your whiskey cold and straight down the hatch. A bottle of Chateau Spill to remove wine stains or blood from the fine silk you're donning. Of course, a bottle of your choice. And the coup de grace, a digital download of the very first basic cable commentary. Roadhouse. This $60 value can be yours for only $25 at CorollaDrinks.com.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Brian Bishop's birthday cocktail party for September 13th. Let's see who's here. Hey, it's Fiona Apple. Tavis Smiley just showed up. The boy who met the world, Ben Savage. The author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Roald Dahl. The founder of an actual chocolate factory, Milton S. Hershey. Having a good time? Well, tell your face, because Jeff Ross is here. And the star of such blockbusters as Madea Goes to Jail, Madea's Family Reunion, and Diary of a Mad Black Woman, Tyler Perry. Good times. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Happy birthday to Bald Brian.
Ooh, hell of a party.
That was an okay party. Yeah, it was an okay party.
It's okay. We've heard, you know, look, once we get enough guests through here, we're going to hear some pretty killer ones. All right.
Adam, we should probably let him win today.
All right.
I don't think you have a choice.
I'll get and tie one hand behind my back. Before we play the game, I think I'll play a little unprepared because coming up, Tempe, Arizona, Tempe Improv, that'll be this weekend, September 18th and 19th. We'll do live podcasts there. And we'll also do, I'll do stand-up there. John Holmberg, who's always funny, always brings it. He'll be on the 18th. And then Rob Schneider, always funny, always brings it as well. He'll be up on the 19th for the live pod. This one is, where are we at, Houston?
This is San Antonio.
San Antonio. What's the subject of this one?
Well, they'll yell it out because we didn't do the ball, so you'll hear the audience.
Oh, okay. So they'll yell it out.
Trump, boobs. Trump and boobs. All right, I'll tell you Trump joke. Trump and boobs. Well, Trump's got a C cup. I like tits. I'm a fucking tit guy. Yeah. I don't know. When I remember when I was like in junior high, you know, talking about tits, and there'd always be one of your stupid friends. I go, more than a handful is a waste. And I'd go, what the fuck are you talking? Get that shit out of here. I like tits. I like big tits. I like when chicks tell you all the shit they can't do because their tits are so big. You know, like I can't do jazzercise. I got these fucking things. Oh, yeah. I wish I could do taekwondo. I can't with these fucking double Ds. I don't know. I don't jog. I'll get through black eyes. I can't do that shit. Next time a chick tells me that, I'm going to go, yeah, I know, man. My balls are so huge, I can't shoot pool. I can't swim. Can't ride a mountain bike. Fucking Nats. Fucking two. Maybe if I rested my nutsack on your tits, maybe we could find some, you know, like a yin and a yang, you know, like maybe we could find some symmetry, make some sense out of this thing called life with my big prodigious nutsack. Yeah, I can.
Well, there you go. That was.
It's funny because it's true.
It's funny because it's true, Gina Grant.
Are you a big nuts, Gina?
The biggest nuts, man.
All right. So we'll be doing some of that coming up soon, like this weekend. And then Salt Lake City Wise Guys, Mark Garagus is going to come out there. We're going to fly out with Mark, actually.
Oh, now we're talking.
That's how we got the invite to be on the show.
I know. Like, oh, when we do a live Reasonable Doubt over there, we'll do a matinee. So that's coming up on Saturday. That's the 3rd of October. All right, shall we do a little Rotten Tomatoes, Dawson?
Listen to that noise. It's a high falsetto voice. It can only mean one thing, and you can feel it. Dawson names are flicks, and the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh. If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus five. It's the rotten tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the rotten tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
All right, so we love celebrating everyone's birthdays with their celebrity birthday cocktail lineup. Even though it's Bald Brian's birthday on the day we're recording this show, an even bigger party animal is celebrating his birthday on the day
bigger
you
than
hear
me.
This show. And that is Jim Carolla.
Oh, that's right.
Adam, did you know that?
Yeah, it was brought to my attention recently.
In the last 4 seconds.
So in honor of Adam's dad and all you September 14th babies, cue the trumpet. Let's get ready to scat, Daddy-O. Amy Winehouse will be there.
Oh.
Sadly, the singer passed away in 2011, but her legacy and lyrics will live on through the 2015 documentary, Amy.
Spectacular.
Well, everyone loved
this. Everyone should see this.
You can't go wrong. I mean, Jesus Christ. You know, anytime you have a talented person, you capture it, and then they die at the end at a young age, you're at least at 80%. Like that, you're at 80% before you even do anything. And then if you do a good job, you're well into the 90s. So I will say that this one is super fresh at 97.
They should call me Bold Brian because I'm going to go with a perfect
100.
Wow. Now
that's
I feel like a critic. I said 94.
Amy is certified fresh.
Oh, yeah.
At 95%.
Yeah, and this is great.
And the people at 87. I've always wondered, like, the critics, in order to get it to 95, you have to have 25 critics out of the 219 go below 60%.
I think it's significantly less than that. But yeah, there are some number that has to go, yeah, that's not for me. And what in this movie is not great? It's a downer, but the fucking bitch dies.
Well, I mean, I just kind of did the math on the fly, but like 25 individuals out of, let's just say, 225 or 219. It's not. Maybe it's 20.
I think it's 11. I think it's 11 individuals because 5 out of 100 would be 5% off 200, and then 1 out of 19.
All right.
So I'm going to go with 11.
All right. Well, still, that's true. It's still more than 10 people gave it a thumbs down.
Just
went
crazy.
Less than 60%. Sorry. Go ahead.
South Korean director Bong Joon-ho recently took home 4 Academy Awards, but surely that celebration will pale in comparison to the thrills awaiting him at Jim Carolla's birthday party.
Oh my God.
It's only been a year since its release, but let's check in on the score for last year's Best Picture winner from 2019, Parasite.
This is an interesting one because I bet there's some blowback from people who saw it after the fact. Like, this wasn't a huge release in America. It was out there, but I bet there were some people who saw it after the fact. Like, nah, not that good.
Yeah, so this, people lost their shit over this, and I'm in that group. I'm like, okay, I gotta see it. People won't shut up about it. I'm like, okay, yeah.
So this Bungalow Sue.
That's right.
So, Gene, I haven't seen it yet. I think you guys may not be in the same camp here. Gina's a little lukewarm on it.
I mean, it's cool, but I'm sorry. I meant in the group that Brian was talking about that, okay, fine, I'll see it because the hype is so huge. I'll see it. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. Okay.
Yeah,
but people lost their minds over it.
To me, it's a very good movie. I thought it deserved to be up for Best Picture. I don't know if it was the Best Picture. Well, it wasn't my favorite, but it's undeniably good. It's a very good movie.
I am going to say that this is one of those films that the critics liked better than the audience.
I can guarantee that's probably true.
And I think it's one of those more critical, and I'm going to say it's going to be at least 10% higher with the critics than it is with the audience, maybe 15 or 20%. Therefore, the critics have it at 91.
Yeah, I'm at 96, and I might be low.
91.
Parasite is certified fresh at 99.
Wow. Oh, God.
Right. Yeah, Murray was 100% at one point, but that was before 450 fucking people reviewed it.
Wow.
Yeah, people had it at 90, so it wasn't quite 10 points, but close.
Very close.
Yeah, 9 points is pretty close.
Actor Andrew Lincoln is probably most recognizable to American audiences as the lead of the hit zombie series The Walking Dead that Adam loves.
Oh, I love zombie. I love bat movies and zombie. I want to wait. I can't wait to see the Batman.
Yeah, vampire mythology is good.
Screw Batman.
Dragons.
Yeah, someone has to do another super original zombie movie. That's so original. All right.
But before The Walking Dead, Andrew Lincoln tried to make actress Keira Knightley swoon in one of many stories told in the 2003 Christmas classic.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Love Actually.
Hold on, let me get my DVD copy.
You and everybody else and I have never seen this, and it's just never.
Gina, it might be your new favorite movie.
You've been saying that for years, and you'd think I'd listen, but I got no interest in this.
So
I don't
good.
Know.
So this okay. is the definition of a rom-com.
This is, I would say, a lot of people consider this the best rom-com. It's very smart. It's fun. It's breezy. It's not stupid. This is a good. I'll go ahead and tell you guys, this is a good movie.
All right, so where are we at with the critics? I mean, rom-coms don't get into the 90s.
But it's very British.
Very British.
Does that help?
Yeah. I've never seen it, but I think everyone seems to love this movie. I'm going with 89.
Ooh. I'm close to it, 81.
87.
Love Actually is fresh.
Oh, yeah.
At 64%.
Listen to Brian.
To take the downgrade into effect for romantic comedies, like you said.
I know, but 64, that's the best stupid. Romantic comedy of all times in the barely mid-60s?
I love it.
Yeah.
Actor Sam Neill will also be attending the party. Between Jurassic Park films, the actor appeared in a much darker science fiction film. He and Lawrence Fishburne co-star as members of a rescue crew investigating a spaceship that disappeared into a black hole and returned with something sinister on board. From 1997, Event Horizon.
Yeah, I got no idea here.
I saw this in 1997, and despite it not being a great movie, I remember several things that left an impression on me.
That's cool.
So 97, you said?
Yeah. I'm trying not to give it away.
No. I don't.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to say 55%.
Oh, jeez. I didn't write down a number. I was definitely going to go lower than that. 33.
Ooh, kind of split the difference. 48.
Event Horizon is rotten. At 28%.
Oh. It's not a good movie.
I guess I shouldn't look at the bottom of the poster where it says 55% anymore.
I think that's the...
What was on the bottom of the...
That's what they're blowing it up to. That's,
yeah,
what
that's the size of the
to.
Image. Don't go
oh,
over.
Oh, God damn it.
If I had to be Intel.
It said 55% at the bottom of the poster. I don't know.
That's outstanding.
What else was I supposed to go off of? I haven't seen this movie.
It says 100%.
Yeah.
No, right. That's not good.
What
no
did
reason
we learn?
To see this.
Is there an IMDb next to it? Or what numbers are those? I'm looking
those
at the bottom
just,
of this poster.
Those are just files. Like he zoomed in 81% to this movie poster.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't see the 81. Yeah. What? I was looking at 55. I could have got burned with 81.
Yeah, right. it was probably smaller than the first one.
Oh, that's bad.
Finally.
Well, make it smaller next time, will you?
Yeah, all right.
We're going to spice up the party with one of the illest rappers to ever play the game, Nas. He and Jim Carolla are going to have plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, the rapper hasn't had the same illustrious acting career as contemporaries like Will Smith or Snoop Dogg, but Nasty Nas did appear as himself in a music mockumentary starring The Lonely Island's Andy Samberg and Akiva Schaffer from 2016, Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
I loved this movie.
Underrated. Underrated.
This is great. I saw this in the theater.
Yeah, this is one of those movies where, you know, maybe I'm a little defensive about this as a guy who creates comedy. But it's like, why do we have to put the jeweler's loop on and sift through comedies all the time? Like, why do we have, you know, Parasite, 99, like, defending your life, 72. You know what I mean? Like, why so difficult with the comedies? Like, you do a funny comedy. Or the stupid reviews were like, I laughed a lot, but still, this left this reviewer like, oh, you laughed. So pardon
or
me.
Or a number of laughs, but yeah, what do you want?
It's a comedy.
It's the same thing with your porn theory.
That's right. That's,
you ask a comedian, did you come?
Did you come? That's the question. Did you laugh? Did you come? So the point is like, this is a funny movie. It was pretty innovative, had a lot of really funny, interesting things in it. And like, you know, maybe it'll be 68, maybe it'll be 72, but well, I don't know. Why not into the 80s? Why not? I laughed all the way through this movie. Why is it going to be 57? You know, I'm like, what do we get so snobby with comedies for? And then we get all, you know, if you do a doc, if you do, you know, a 20 Feet from Stardom, or if you do the aforementioned, God, what were we just talking about?
Parasite? Defending Your Life?
Oh. A Parasite or, no, but.
Love Actually?
Oh, Amy or something?
Amy Winehouse. Yeah, that's 99, you know, and then this, like, is a comedy. Comedy's hard to do. It's hard to do 100 minutes that are funny straight through, and the people that do it should get more than a 66. That's all I'm saying. All right, so we all saw this movie. We all laugh, but we also
several times. Yeah.
We also know that the critics aren't. They're not going to give it the love. Now I'm way behind here because I was misled on the last movie poster.
You were.
I was. So I, you know, this movie should be 80. But I got to make up some points. It's good. I'm going to go low. I'm going 55.
Yeah, you threw out a lot of numbers, and I've been around this game long enough to know that one of them will be the score.
That's right.
So I went with the 72.
Mm-hmm.
I think you may have thrown out this number. You said, you know, will it be above 66? No way. I think it gets a little bit of bump because of Judd Apatow and Lonely Island, and that's kind of a cool thing to be associated with. So I said 65.
Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping is certified fresh at 79.
Ooh. Now we're talking.
Wow. And the people had it at 65. Oh, my
God. Wow.
Big birthday win.
All right. Gina Grad. Yeah. Congratulations, you made the podium.
All right.
With a score of 66, Adam Carolla, you also made the podium. But you're 86th to third place, leaving us Bald Brian coming in with a score that's good for the win at 37.
Good score.
Wow.
All right.
Happy birthday.
Feeling good.
Our plan worked.
I've been off the meds for a week. I won the Rotten Tomatoes game. This is about as good as it gets.
Well, Brian's been winning a lot lately. We haven't had a dead nuts on score in a while. No one's got the 5-point deduction for a while. It's like sort of that when you've been sitting at the blackjack table for a while, no one's gotten blackjack around you. But Brian has won at least five of these things in a row. All right, Max Pat, I have a thought about Air Force One. So look for a picture of Air Force One. And then, and I'll tell you about, not the movie, I'll tell you about BetterHelp. BetterHelp Online, licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, anxiety, relationships, sleep, anger, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your counselor in a safe, private, online environment. Anything shared is confidential. Simply fill out a questionnaire. It'll assess your needs, get matched up in under 48 hours, easy to schedule, secure video or phone sessions, plus exchange unlimited messages. There's a lot going on out there, and as you guys know, lots of very topsy-turvy society. We need to kind of get our heads right, people, and that's where BetterHelp comes in. And maybe you don't want to leave your house, so you just do it with a video session or a phone session. For any reason, if you're unhappy with your counselor, you can request a new one anytime, no charge. Join the over 1 million people using BetterHelp. In fact, so many are using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. It's BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
BetterHelp is a truly affordable option, and our listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code Corolla. So why not get started today? Go to BetterHelp.com/Corolla. That's BetterHelp.com/CarolLa. Talk to a therapist online and get help.
And Max Patty, you got to find Air Force One. You also have to find the Thunderbirds as well, the Air Force Thunderbirds. Not the TV show or the movie or whatever it is. But I was looking at Air Force One. If there's one good thing to come from this whole COVID business is the stuff I've been yelling about for years, which is when, remember I'd always say President Obama would come into LAX and then the whole motorcade would go all the way through Los Angeles to the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion and they'd shut down Wilshire and they shut everything down. I'd go, do it from the airport. Do it at the hangar. Yep. Do it at Air Force One. You wouldn't have to. You could fly into LAX. You could get off the plane. You could do the whole thing there. The mountain could come to Muhammad. Everyone could go there and you wouldn't have to shut the city down. Well, I think maybe due to this COVID business, at least Trump, I feel like, is doing some of his rallies in front of Air Force One at the airport or in the hangar. And I started looking at Air Force One and I was like, it's got a weird kind of turquoisey and a blue and a white. And I thought, what's this got to do with the United States? This sort of Caribbean color combo. Like, it's pleasing. It's aesthetically pleasing. And now that I look at it, I'm now looking at it and realizing it's like camouflage from the bottom. It's supposed to look like the sky, I guess.
Oh, okay. Yep. But white on top, eye blue on the bottom.
If you think about it, if you find me the Thunderbirds are just red, white, and blue and eagles everywhere and pow. I'm surprised Trump hasn't painted Air Force One. I mean, they are just stars and stripes and reds and whites and eagles, and you can find.
How am I looking at
other
That's
shots?
Crazy. Is that real?
Yes. These guys fly 4 inches away from each other. But Max Pat, I appreciate what you're doing, but perhaps if you can find a cleaner, just kind of single shot of the Thunderbirds. But not quite yet. You got to get the top. They have like eagle's wings on the bottom. They have like wings painted on the bottom of the wings. They have like bird wings on the bottom and the top. And it's like, it's all red, white, and blue. It's the most patriotic thing ever. So what I'm saying is how do we end up with Air Force One? And as I look at it now, maybe it's a camouflage. Maybe it's a form of camouflage.
For some kind of surface to air, attack.
Yeah, like you couldn't. Well, not you couldn't see it, but you could you'd have a more difficult time looking up and seeing the light blue underbelly of that plane, I suppose, if you're a bad guy on the ground firing it up. Find another picture of the Thunderbirds.
Yeah, we're working.
There's they don't mess around. Everyone knows the Blue Angels, but people forget about the Thunderbirds. The Thunderbirds, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yes. Sorry.
Chris, I sent you guys a clip. I don't know if you have it. When you said Air Force One and you had thoughts about it, for a second, I thought you were talking about this. And now that I think more clearly, you probably aren't familiar with this particular group or this particular song. But when you said Air Force One, I did get excited for a minute. Do you guys have that?
Yeah, we're putting it up right now.
It's a musical.
Oh, no. So much better.
Oh, no. On my birthday?
Force One.
Air Force One.
It appeals to a certain demographic.
Yeah. I kind of thought you might be mentioning them.
Are these all bears?
Yeah, they're all bears.
Don't act all naive.
I don't think they're Americans, but they are very patriotic. It's Bear Force One.
Yeah, so somebody figured out probably the scheme, and it's probably a safety thing, but I'd like to go a little more Thunderbirds with the Air Force One. Although it's appealing in its look.
Yeah, dare I say Air Force One is tasteful?
Yes, it's tasteful.
Like, I don't think I'd want it to be stars and bars. Like, it's kind of understated.
No, I get it. I'm just surprised. I kept looking at going, this is an interesting combination for the United States president's airplane. And then I realized, oh, it's light blue at the bottom. Because if you're looking up, you're looking up at the light blue, and then it's dark blue at the top, I guess, and it's got the white in there. I think they're going for a little bit, maybe a little bit difficult to pick out at night or something, some version.
It was also chosen by Jackie Kennedy. That it's actually called Jackie Kennedy Blue. So she
really?
This colorway, yeah.
What was it before then? She's got a good eye, that Jackie Kennedy.
Good aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, begs the question, did they have an Air Force One before 1960?
Yeah, I think they had one. They had a prop plane, but I don't know if they called it Air Force One. It's kind of interesting. You can look that up. All right,
have you guys ever been to the Air Force One at Sylmar, the Reagan Library?
Yeah, see me.
Have you been through it? See me, right.
Yeah.
It's crazy because you walk through it and you're like, it's like everything feels so old fashioned. Like, this was it. This was the lap of luxury.
Air Force One, the Reagan's Air Force One, which is at the Simi Valley Reagan Library, which I have been through. Don't go through that plane and never sit in the actual Batmobile. You'll just go like, ugh. It's so junky. It's so fake. Yeah. Like bad 80s stuff. Like, it just seems very, all the stuff you hated about the early 80s, that's what the inside of that plane feels like.
Yeah. So when Kennedy first got the plane, it was in red and metallic gold, and he felt it was too regal. So he had his wife pick out some new colors that was a little
red
softer.
And gold.
Yeah.
Interesting. He must have got caught fucking around with the secretary or something. Like, oh, okay, why don't you paint the plane, sweetheart? We'll call it a draw. All right, let me hit Simply Safe. No one should feel unsafe at home, period, and that's where Simply Safe comes in. Protect your home. Get free shipping, two eyes in there, at simplysafe.com/Adam. That is simplysafe.com/Adam. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back and do the news right after this.